All right, welcome everybody to another episode of Stark After Dark. I'm your host, Jordan Clark, and this is the podcast all about comic romances and comic relationships. And today I am joined by a talented creator and somebody who's working on comics that involve romance very heavily, Tony Gregory.
Hi.
I was going back and forth with Tony, just talking about what we would talk about, and he mentioned that he's a big fan of 90s comics. That's kind of his jam. And then we got to talking about Fantastic Four a little bit, and his fascination, I guess, about the Reed and Sue relationship. So this is going to be a Fantastic Four themed episode. I need to come up with a clever title. Like, Fantastic Foursome seems not
people involved in these romances, so shortchanging them.
That's true. But
perhaps would be
maybe, yeah. So if anybody has any suggestions, please let me know. We'll work it out. But
it's positive though, right? I don't want to come at this from a shaming angle or
no. Yeah, I mean it's everything's positive. I mean we're going to be talking about, you know, a huge rock man and his love life. So, you know, we're all about positivity. Whatever you want to do, it's all love. There's no
nothing adults,
right? So one thing I like to do with guests on the show is I usually start with two questions. First question is, what is your favorite comic book romance or relationship? Is there one throughout comics that you kind of, you know, it's enduring, you know, you always like reading about those characters, and you find the relationship interesting?
I'm a Spidey fan, so
okay,
I'd have to go with Peter and MJ.
Now so MJ's the one, not Gwen Stacy, not any of the other romances, Black Cat.
I wouldn't call Black Cat a more of a tryst or a,
yeah,
you know, a rendezvous.
I mean, there's, you know, I mean,
she's in love with Spider-Man, not Peter.
Right, that's true, and that's, I mean, again, that's a weird facet of superhero relationships where you have, you know, people who don't know each other's secret identities, so they're in love with the, you know, superhero part, or they're in love with the civilian part. But they're not really in love with the whole complete person, I guess. So the second question is, do you have a relationship that you just hate? Like, you hate those two characters together. Every time, you know, you read the comic, you're like, oh my God, I can't wait for these people to break up. I can't wait for this to be over.
Yeah, people are going to hate me for this.
Okay.
It's Rogue and Gambit.
Ooh.
It's so much better.
What is it about it that you don't enjoy?
He uses her. He doesn't really care for her. I don't really. But then again, I'm coming in from the 90s, so I don't know if, you know, I haven't really read much X-Men in the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps it's evolved and it's different now. But
well, very recent revelation is they got married. That's so awesome. They're now officially Mr. and Mrs. X. They got a new series that's coming out this year. So we'll see. I mean, I think, you know, it is one of those relationships. I was talking with a friend on the show about just X-Men relationships, and X-Men dudes are typically pretty shitty. Like, we were going through the list and we were like, all right, you know, Nightcrawler is fine. Like, Nightcrawler is a good dude. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, Cyclops is not a great dude. Wolverine is not a great dude.
But, you know, in a relationship, I mean, I guess his biggest problem is every woman he ends up falling in love with ends up getting murdered.
That's a problem.
Like, he treats them from his point of view, like, you know, it's not his fault that ninjas are trying to kill him 24/7.
I mean, that's fair, but I'll also say that, I mean, again,
he doesn't mistreat his partners, it doesn't seem.
Right. I mean, my biggest, and this might be a discussion I get into every episode now, is that my biggest problem. with Wolverine is that, specifically his relationship with Jean Grey, or his perceived relationship with Jean Grey, is that, you know, right. Well, but that is him, you know, like he became immediately emotionally dependent upon her, you know, when he joined the X-Men. And then it just became, you know, not even like, you know, chasing a woman who's in a committed relationship, but like it just got kind of creepy and weird, and like always just trying to like butt in and find the perfect opportunity to get Scott out of the way. And I mean, this is something I talked about too on another episode, is that the X-Men and the Avengers have a very strange social dynamic, in that ostensibly they're co-workers, right? They're on the same team together.
Yeah.
Specifically in the X-Men situation, they all live in the same house. So they're roommates and they're co-workers. And they have, and again, depending on, you know, who's in a relationship with who, you have very strange interpersonal power dynamics. So, I mean, Scott is not only Wolverine's coworker, it's also his boss, right? So it's like trying to get...
like middle management. He's not really...
Well, yeah, I mean, he's not like Professor X. So, I mean, but he's, you know, but I mean, he's still in a sense superior to Wolverine. So it's like trying to break up your superior's relationship, who's also your roommate, and then like,
okay, but that's fine. But, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but also like Jean Grey, I remember episodes or situations where Jean Grey like probed Wolverine's mind and helped him like remember
right.
and actually relieved a lot of the stress and the tension that he was feeling. So in his defense, like perhaps maybe that has played into his
right.
And also he realizes Scott would immediately jump into Emma's bed. Scott really is just an egotistical prick and doesn't care about himself.
Well, and somebody brought this up in another episode as well, is that Scott, like the whole Madeline Pryor situation where he's like having a child with a clone of his dead wife that is now back, so he's like having his wife twice, I guess, in a weird, like,
yeah, like Hulk Hogan with like all his girlfriends over, like his daughter or his wife, ex-wife, but they're all like the same person, and he meets them all at like 19 or 20,
right? Yeah, no. I mean, Scott's got issues. I mean, a lot of them have it. I mean, that's the conclusion that we came to, is that a lot of them have just weird issues. And you know, I'm sure again, when you go down the line, I mean, not all the X-Men guys are shitty, but even like again, like in the last 10 years or so, you know, they tried to have a storyline where Professor X was also kind of looking at Jean Grey, like, like maybe, yeah, so look that up.
I'm not gonna Google that.
Go check that out. let's get into some Fantastic Four stuff, because we could talk about this all day, and there's a lot of interesting stuff here. Just in terms of, you know, the Fantastic Four's dynamic, I think one of the more interesting things about them is that, you know, again, so you look at the Avengers and you look at, you know, X-Men and a lot of these other teams. And, you know, besides the Inhumans, who they're also very closely linked to, you know, all those teams might have, you know, some people who are married, or they might have some people who are, you know, siblings. But the Fantastic Four is a family, basically. It's, you know, Reed and Sue, who are married, Johnny and Sue, who are brother and sister. Later on, when Franklin and Valeria come into the picture, it's Reed and Sue's two kids, and you know, Ben Grimm, the Thing, who's basically like everybody's brother in some way, shape, or form. So it's this kind of big family unit. And the comic, a lot of the series, even from way back in the day, has a lot of interpersonal drama. Like, you know, they're in space and they're fighting, you know, Annihilus and all these other things, but then, you know, at the core of the stories are a lot of just their interpersonal
dynamics,
Yeah. So we're going to go down, we're going to talk about all of them, but obviously the one at the forefront is Reed and Sue. And it's really interesting how their relationship has at once evolved, you know, in some ways. Specifically, again, you know, you don't really see characters over time, you know, have children and those children get older and them raising their children and all of those things, but has also kind of stagnated in some ways, where you have this repeated narrative of, you know, Reed as, you know, smartest man in the world, you know, always in the lab, always busy, always doing stuff. He's always got to be working on his next project. You know, everything is very serious and, you know, has the fate of the world in it, you know, at least in his mind. And then you've got, you know, Sue over here who, you know, like in the very beginning was basically just, she was the girl on the team, and often she was the weakest member of the team, basically, is how she was written. She could just be invisible. It was basically her power.
It's not really.
And I mean, you know, they would use it in interesting ways, but at the same time, like, you know, she would kind of be, she would, Doom would kidnap her, or, you know, she would pass out and they'd have to like help save her, you know. And then as time went on, you know, she kind of became, you know, a bigger member of the team. She was eventually basically like second in command. When Reed was gone, she was the leader of the team.
Powerful too.
Right. Her powers increased a lot, and
able to do, if you like, right. Take her power and then you extrapolate it and you figure out, oh, where can we take this? She could, you know, she could rival Magneto in terms of like being the most powerful beings in the Marvel universe, I think.
Right. So then it was kind of this thing where, you know, she couldn't just be the nagging housewife anymore. That was like, you know, Reed, did you eat yet? You know, let's go out. You know, you haven't taken me on a date in forever. You're always in the lab, blah, blah, blah. But there's still this kind of dynamic between them where, you know, it swings back and forth. They're either really happy together and it's kind of this wedded bliss, or something's wrong. You know what I mean? And it's usually Reed is just being a neglectful dick. So how do you read their relationship as it's changed over time?
Well, you know, when I did my little 20 minutes of research last night, just to refresh myself on the dynamics, I came across something which I thought was interesting, which was like the origin of their relationship itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how old Reed was when they went into space and the event happened where they got their powers. But from what I was reading, Sue was like 17, 18 years old. And she was had just met Reed.
Right.
And then he takes her into space. They all get powers and they come back down, and she's intrinsically tied to him now for the rest of her life because of this event when she was 17 years old. And even going back even further with her father was like, their mother died when they were young, when Johnny and Sue were young.
Mm-hmm.
And Sue's father became an alcoholic and basically abandoned them.
Right.
So she has some deep seated like family things going on. So she meets this man who has salt and pepper when she's 17 or 18 years old, goes into space with a guy, gets superpowers unwittingly, and then comes back and now is like basically tied to this guy for the rest of her life. And from my point of view, it feels like she's just trying to make it work with this guy. She realizes who he is, but also how he's a super genius.
Right.
Kind of like the whole Casablanca, you know, Bogey, like Bogey is no more. And I forget the actor's name, but who plays the guy with the scar.
Yeah.
Elsa eventually is with and then leaves with. I forget his name.
Yeah, I'm blanking on it too.
Yeah, but basically Bogey realizes, you know, she realizes that this guy is like part of the resistance, and, you know, maybe she doesn't love him as much as she loves Bogey, but she realizes that she needs to like be with him to help for the greater good.
Right.
So I feel like in some way that's what Sue is doing, because if she left Reed would probably become like an evil genius.
Well, and that's basically what happened in the Ultimate Universe, is that you know, Sue basically was tired of his shit, and you know, kind of, and it's, I mean, the Ultimate Universe is you know, people have their own feelings about it. It's a little bit weird because, I mean, in that universe, she leaves Reed to kind of basically be with Ben, and you know, they kind of have a thing going on, but then Reed does turn into, he becomes the Maker, and like is one of the, like, if not the premier villain. I mean, he becomes the Doctor Doom of that universe, you know what I mean? Like, he's basically trying to, he gets divorced from all humanity, you know, to the point where he's trying to recreate life in his own vision of what it should be. So it is I want to go back to the idea of, like, what did Reed do to get her to get on that spaceship and go into space with him? Because I always find that one of the most interesting things, like, and because in different iterations they have different reasonings and versions of it, yeah. But like, it never made sense for her or Johnny to be on the ship, because really it's, you know, sometimes it's, you know, Reed is the scientist and then Ben is the pilot. Ben is the one who's flying the spaceship. It makes sense for both of them to be on there. In some instances, Sue is also, you know, a scientist and, you know, has some reason to be there.
We're totally forgetting the version where Doom was on the. Talk about that.
But then. But then Johnny, it's also like, I got to go back and read that original story, because like, okay, you're going to take your girlfriend into space. You're going to take her kid brother into space too. I mean, like, I know space.
Why is he going?
Like, I know back.
Mom too. Like,
right. Just, yeah. It's anybody, you know, anybody who wanted to come along, really. It was so, they had a lot of extra seats.
Well, their last name's Storm, and that's a really cool last name. So.
Because, you know, from my, I think, I mean, they had been dating for a little. It wasn't like, you know, they had just met last week and then she's on the spaceship. But I just can't imagine any situation in which I could talk a woman into that. I wasn't like, one, I mean, like, again, this is, we got to take into account, it's the 60s, space exploration, everything's cool. Yeah. You know, obviously we're talking about a comic book, so I mean, it's not real life, but at the same time, like, like, it's not even, cause it's not even like, oh, like, we're going to go into space. And I'm like, because I'm the cool guy who has access to a spaceship, and like, I'm trying to impress this woman and like take her to space, and like, we're gonna have a date on the moon or something like that. It's like, I'm bringing you along on what's basically a research project, and like, you're gonna go into space with me while I observe things and probably ignore you for however long this whole thing is gonna happen, and then we're gonna go back to Earth.
Yeah, I just want you to come up there and see me in my spacesuit doing cool shit.
Right.
Attractive and be impressed by me. And oh, by the way, we need some wisecracks, so bring your... Who's basically, I don't know.
But... What could happen? Right. But so I am intrigued by your reading of that relationship as well, just as her maybe not necessarily trapped in this relationship. Like, she's not, yeah,
feeling like, especially since her brother's involved too,
and right, like
super team, and they've kind of devoted their life to this cause. But then, like, you know, I, like you said, it's a comic book, so I don't want to get, you know, but if you look at it just from a, you know, metaphor and storytelling, she's never really been able to like explore her own life,
right,
like as an adult.
Right, and she's old.
Like, you don't know how, like, I have to reiterate, I don't know how old Reed was when this trip.
He was like a little bit older than her. I don't think he was, I think if she was a freshman, he maybe was a junior.
Senior, okay.
Yeah.
He wasn't like 25-year-old man.
Nah, I think maybe he was like 21.
Also, why would you shoot college students in the face?
You know what? Empire State was letting them do a whole bunch of shit because, I mean, the thing that Doom was doing in his, you know, his dorm room that gave him, you know, all his stuff, like they, not a lot of regulations going on at that university. I don't know if they're still accredited, but it was not.
No one regulates Doom.
So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of interesting, you know, takeaways just in terms of how you want to view it, because some people, you know, view them as the iconic couple of comics, you know, Marvel, DC included. I mean, you know, if you're talking about comic book relationships, you've got, you know, Superman, Clark Kent, Lois Lane, for DC. And then for Marvel, you've got Reed and Sue. They're kind of the, They're literally the old married couple of, you know, the Marvel universe, but they're kind of like the
Rick Swing.
Yeah.
Sue, not necessarily Reed, but Sue, you know, she's had encounters with others, I believe.
Well, and what's interesting about their relationship is that from the start, from a fandom perspective of readers, but also just from an in-world perspective, like, people have always been trying to break them up, like, constantly. Like, Namor came in pretty early into the whole run of Fantastic Four, and just from the start was like, I'm trying to get with Sue. I don't care about Reed or any of this other stuff. You know, I want her to be my underwater queen, and we're gonna go Real Atlantis together. And then later on, when Black Panther came into the picture for the first time, he was kind of like, hey, who's that? Yeah. You know, Doom has always had eyes for her.
French, the language of love.
So, you know, it's a very interesting dynamic just in the comics world too. Like, they, like, a storyline is basically somebody is trying to steal Sue away from, you know, not only just Reed, but basically, if, I mean, do you, Namor is not taking the kids. Like, Namor is not bringing.
No, he doesn't. These guys want you because you can basically give yourself like an air bubble to breathe underwater, right. And we're made for each other,
right?
Breathe underwater with your, you know, abilities. I'm a fish man. These abs. I mean, you know, she's. And when you think about Sue, like, she's, when it comes to like physical types, she's kind of run the gamut.
Mm-hmm.
Reed, who we all, you know, Reed's ability and what he can do.
Right.
T'Challa, who is basically like the epitome of human evolution.
Right.
Who has like, you know, some special abilities. And a Namor, who is a god, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That was built like a god, and he's got wings on his feet, and, you know, he's sexy as fuck, right?
So, right. Well, I mean, and again, I think it's interesting because,
right?
Well, on the one hand, like, you look at Namor and you're like, dude, like, you could basically get anybody. You know what I mean? It's not like, you know, Sue is like, not even like offense to Sue, but like, you know, like, after however many years of her saying no, like, you know, probably move on. Well, but
Reed. So,
right. But I think that's part of it, though, is that he's similar to Doom in that, like, nobody says no to Namor. So, like, the fact that she keeps rejecting him, I think he's one of those dudes who's like, oh, this is a challenge now. Like, when I finally, you know, break her down, like, she'll come running to me. And, you know, and then I'll have everything I ever wanted. But then it's also, I think, somewhat is the case with Doom as well, is they're looking at Reed and they're like, and you're not coming to me for that guy, like, you're staying with this dude and you could be with me, like, I don't understand.
Also, you know, I think Namor's thing with Reed is also the way he feels about the surface world in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he realizes Reed's role, like, he realizes the surface world while he hates it, at the same time he does need the surface world to some extent to be like stable and not a fiery hellscape.
Right.
It will affect his world. But he hates it. And he hates that he has to concern himself with that.
Mm-hmm.
And can possibly read as like, oh, I can't stand you. You're such a dick. You know, you're so arrogant and you're, you know, but I also know you're brilliant and, you know, we need you like in the Illuminati or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
Keep the peace and fight the good fight. Even though I know like maybe aren't necessarily the best guy. And also he realizes that Sue, like that's why Namor's bogey at the end of Casablanca. He's like, vital to this man's work. Like, I, you know, if you look at a lot of the interactions with Namor and Reed when they talk about Sue, Namor's basically doing the bogey speech. So.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, there's there's a lot of instances where Namor is basically like, I mean, he's throwing a lot of shade in these conversations because he's basically like,
he doesn't hide his feelings. See, Namor doesn't. That's the thing about Namor. He's never really been a great liar. So
no. Yeah, so
too up in his own shit to even lie. I don't even care what you think about what I'm about to say.
Right. No, he's like, I mean, yeah. I mean, his whole sentiment each time is basically like, you don't deserve any of this. But like, yeah. I, you know, almost.
You're an accident. You know, you're you from a happy accident. Like,
right. And so I'm doing the chivalrous and the honorable thing by letting this continue because at any, if I wanted her, like she would be with me, but you know, yeah. So I mean, I think that's such an interesting part of their relationship because Namor is basically the third part of that. I mean, for this whole time, like he's always been kind of just hovering on the outside of that whole thing of, you know, people are just kind of waiting. Like, when's the day that Sue's just going to walk out on Reed and go to Namor? And, you know, is that because, I mean, obviously for Sue, like neither of those are desirable options. Like, like none of... Both sides of that coin are not.
If Sue asked me for advice, I'd be like, you just need to be alone for a while. Like
right. Maybe
take a couple of years for yourself, like go on a trip, maybe, you know, fight supervillains on your own or
right
for a bit and date around, maybe in a poly thing, you know, don't take anything seriously, you know.
Yeah, I mean, because she, again, like as we've seen her evolve and grow and be written with more depth, you know, throughout just her history, like, you know, she is one of those people who it's, I mean, it's unfortunate because, you know, I mean, when you write her into the corner of, you know, kind of a neglected housewife, like, I think that does her a huge disservice as a character, not only just as a superhero, but as a person. But then I also feel like, you know, she, like you're saying, I mean, she's kind of cognizant of her position within the team, you know, like, and then obviously she's a mother, you know, and she's got two young children that she's responsible for. And then
a whole other conversation.
Yeah. but then she's also, I mean, I, you know, at the best of times, you know, when both of them are written at their best, you know, like she really does love Reed, like she's whether it's just like you're saying, like she was young and like this is the man that she fell for, or it was just kind of, you know, over time, you know, her feelings have grown to a certain point. I think anybody who has been in a long-term relationship can kind of, you know, empathize with the idea of, you know, maybe it's not even that she couldn't do better, you know, because in a lot of respects she could do better, you know what I mean, depending on who she ended up with, but that, you know, I think she's put a lot of work into this relationship. And I think when you've been with somebody for a long time, there are certain things that you've come to know and accept about that person. And it's a lot of work to get to know somebody intimately on that level. It's a lot of work to, because Sue's not perfect either, you know what I mean? I think a lot of people like to write her like that as well. As she's like, she's the perfect woman, the perfect person, you know? And I think, obviously, again, character-wise, that does her a disservice as, like, she's held up to this unattainable light and level where if she was to ever make a mistake, like, it would be like the way you'd be like Mother Teresa, like, making a mistake. But, like... You know, when you've put all this time and effort into, you know, this relationship, and then there's kids involved, and then there's all this other stuff involved, like I feel like she isn't settling, maybe, but she's found whatever they have, they found something that works. And so, you know, they know that through whatever disputes that they're having, like, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and that, you know, relationships are work. Being in a relationship with somebody does require a lot of sacrifice and work on both ends. So, you know, she's willing to, but I think that's the thing that frustrates a lot of people, is that rarely do you see that work reciprocated from Reed's end, right?
Reed's all about Reed. And every once in a while he notices Sue and, oh, maybe I need to take her out to dinner or something.
Right.
I've been paying attention to her.
Like, you know, because the
dinner, my guy. Like, you know.
Because, yeah, I mean, they'll have Reed make these, like, grand romantic gestures out of the blue every once in a while. It's kind of like, oh, baby, like, please, like, I didn't mean to, you know, whatever I did this time, you know. But after so many times, though, it's just like, how do you not get that? Again, as smart as he is, he seems to have just terrible time management skills, that he can't, like, schedule in, like, okay, so here's a question I was having with somebody else. Is Reed the dude that schedules sex on the calendar, like, as, like, this is, we're gonna have sex Friday?
Yeah.
From
machine from 8 at night. I have a window from 8:30 to 9 o'clock, and then we will go kissing, touching, oral, and missionary, and then we're finished. I will shower immediately afterwards, and I will get back to work.
And you can't really argue against that. Like, that sounds exactly like what you would
do. That sounds horrible.
but you would think that he would have figured out some kind of work-life balance where, you know, he can do the things that you need to do as a married man and a father.
Well, I mean,
and still do the work.
I work like 10 hours a day drawing, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
My life is completely out of balance. So my relationships don't last very long, probably because of that. So maybe like Reed Richards more than I care to admit.
See, and that's where the resentment comes from. Is this too much Reed in you, and vice versa?
I see so much of myself in Reed. That's why I hate him. I'm like,
<"Ew." laughs> Well, so let's, because I mean, again, I want to hear some of the things that you've found just in your research and looking through their relationship, because there's a lot of crazy shit.
Yeah, I didn't dig too deep, and I'm sure a lot of people, if anybody who's listening to this or watching this, who's familiar with Fantastic Four, probably is screaming like, "No, that's not what happened," or, you know, they'll know better than I. But I did do like a surface level dive on like some, you know, Wikipedia and then some websites, and I was kind of amazed at stuff I discovered.
What's the craziest thing?
Well, I guess if we're sticking with Reed and Sue, I didn't realize that Franklin was basically a C-section.
Mm-hmm.
That was, they had to go to the negative zone,
right?
To get something from Annihilus.
Oh, yeah, I think they had to get the cosmic rod to
to give birth to his kid, and I'm like, what in the? And I don't know, when was this story made? Like the 80s?
90s? I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so, and, you know, that's kind of progressive in a way. And I thought that was kind of cool, but also kind of like batshit crazy.
Right.
Character in this book about these people who wear spandex, they're like, basically, we need to pry this baby out of my wife's uterus. Cosmic rod.
Right.
Another alien. And then, oh, when he comes out, he's all fucked up.
Like, right. Well, and so
brain off, and then Sue leaves me because I shut
off. Well, and so that's the thing too. I mean, that's one of the big moments, you know, in Fantastic Four history, where, you know, they have the baby, and, you know, he's a mutant. You know, they find out, and so people don't really know how powerful Franklin really is. And you know, gets to a point where his powers are kind of, you know, because I mean he's still, I mean he's maybe like 4 or 5 or something like that, you know, when this happens, but you know he's starting to develop, you know, stronger and stronger power levels, but because he's just a child, he's not really able to control it. And you know, Sue and Reed are having, you know, conversations about, hey, you know, what should we do with Franklin? Maybe let's, you know, is there anybody that we could see, you know, maybe, you know, some other, you know, super smart members of the superhero community can kind of help us out, you know, and Reed is kind of like, maybe I'll turn his brain off. And Sue is like, what?
that's your go-to? Like, was that his first choice? He didn't like say maybe we should talk to Xavier or
right,
or like maybe another telepath or maybe I don't know therapy. Like no, I'm just gonna shut his brain off because I don't want him to hurt anybody.
Right. So I mean,
I'm just gonna do it. Like
yeah. So there's this image, this famous Fantastic Four image where like Reed is like jumping into the panel with like this big ass gun, shooting his child. Who goes limp in Sue's arms and like basically just like is just out, you know what I mean? And like you're saying, then Sue's just kind of like, okay, that's too far, like we're to leave for a while. And you know, eventually Franklin is fine and Sue comes back and they're a happy family again. I mean, again, I don't, that's
back together, Namor, so
right. I mean, again, it's like that's some intense family therapy shit. Like when Franklin grows up, he's gonna have some weird conversations with his parents.
Yeah, I mean, it's like remember that time you shut my brain off? I don't. I don't remember a goddamn thing, Dad.
So then again, like when later on when Valeria is born. First of all, Valeria originally appears like in the negative zone as a villain that they're fighting. She's a time displaced version of their daughter that Franklin knows who it is, but nobody else knows who it is. And they're forced to like kill her. But then through a more comic book events, she gets like de-aged and put back into Sue's uterus, and then like
did it.
I forgot who did it, but it was a whole weird thing where that happened, and then she was pregnant, but then Reed was off on another adventure and couldn't get back to this universe, so like Johnny had to call Doom to come in to deliver the baby because they're having similar complications as last time.
That's where Doom comes in.
Yeah, and Doom was just like, I'll do it, but you owe me one, and that owe me one is I get to name your child.
Yeah, and then I'm familiar.
Right, yeah, and then basically put a curse on her so I can like see everything. That it was, again, very strange.
Yeah. That's gonna be my spy.
She's gonna right.
My mole in the Fantastic Four. Your
child. And, right, and then again, basically as they go on, like, you know, Doom and Valeria develop this very interesting relationship where, I mean, she refers to him as Uncle Doom and, you know, is kind of like, you know, she goes, I mean, she obviously is Reed and Sue's child, but like sometimes she'll just go to Castle Doom and like hang out with Doom and like, you know, kind of be his weird surrogate daughter. And like, I, again, like their whole family dynamics are very strange and bizarre.
Cool uncle.
Right. Well, cool yeah. Uncle,
like, he's been arrested a couple of times. Been a motorcycle gang.
Owns a country.
Yeah. Yeah. Got shit together. You know, he's no dumbass.
A
little evil.
Right. And I mean, maybe Valeria is too, who knows?
Yeah, just because you're born from a superhero couple doesn't mean you're going to
get yeah.
So you have to choose your own
path. So. You make your own choices, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
For sure.
So,
you have all these stories, and you tell these stories about these characters for decades and decades. You have to diverge.
Yeah. Well, so we kind of skipped over this part, but we can talk about it for a second. I don't know if you read anything about the marriage of Sue and Reed, the actual like wedding ceremony, because it's one of the most iconic moments, again, in Fantastic Four history, but also comics history, in where you know, Fantastic Four are weird because they're one of the few superheroes in any, you know, Marvel or DC who, like, they're very public figures. Like, people know who all of them are. Like, they have the names, you know, Mr. Fantastic and the Invisible Woman, but everybody also knows, like, who they actually are. They have a very prominent building that they all live in the heart of Manhattan. Right. Yeah. Like, they're not, they're celebrities, you know, on a certain level. So when they have their, you know, wedding, it's announced in the newspapers, like, everybody knows this is happening. It's a huge event. It's almost like, you know, a royal wedding of sorts. And basically Dr. Doom, like, obviously was not invited to the wedding.
You have to crash it, make a scene.
Well, that's basically what happens, is that he incites all these other villains to go and, like, crash this wedding. And, like, at first it kind of starts out with some low-level villains trying to get in, and then, you know, you've got, like, Iron Man and Spider-Man and some other heroes that kind of cut them off and shut them down. And then, you know, it kind of just continues to escalate and escalate until basically in the middle of the ceremony, there's a huge just superhero brawl in the church, and, like, everybody's fighting. And eventually, obviously, they get married. But it's just, it kind of set the standard for a lot of comic book weddings to come, because, you know, you just can't have an issue where they say I do, and then that's it.
That would be boring.
But
the moment that we've had together for the last 50 years, it's just them making out.
Like, right, wow. Just for 20 pages, yeah. It's... Yeah.
But then it's like the people who buy the Fantastic Four every month are going to want to see some slobber knocking.
Right. So that was kind of their solution, was like, okay, we'll give you the wedding, and then we'll give you, like, this ridiculous over the top situation.
That's kind of what you want, right? If you're
right.
You know, if I read say they have Peter and MJ get married again.
Right.
I hope it's an issue where, like, the Sinister Six crash the wedding, and
right,
you know, that's what you want to see. You don't want to,
but they have to get married, right? So, last couple notes on Reed and Sue, because I think there's a few more interesting things. You know, Grant, of course, Grant Morrison is the one that, in his Elseworlds kind of alternate universe version of Fantastic Four, it was called 4321, Doom successfully kind of breaks up the Fantastic Four. You know what I mean? He seeds some doubt and some jealousy and, you know, some other things throughout the group, and eventually they all kind of disband. And in the disbanding is when Sue finally goes to Namor, and, you know, I don't think it would be that hard to find. I think if you Google Sue Storm Namor, like, it's probably one of the first things that's going to show up. You know, there's the a page where it's like Sue, like, Namor, and again, like, who knows where Namor lives. I mean, he lives in Atlantis, but the way that it's, like, portrayed is, like, Sue knocks on his door, and, like, Namor, of course, is, like, just in a towel, and, like, he opens the door, and it's Sue, and, like, they don't really say anything, and then, like, they just start making out. Yeah. And that's kind of, like, the
okay. Yeah.
Right.
He's like, married. It's Namor, I'm married. And he's like...
Hubba, hubba. Yeah, but that's kind of, I mean, that was kind of Grant Morrison taking the shot that I think a lot of people were trying to take for a long time. And it, I mean, again, because it's kind of an Elseworlds story, kind of a what if story. Because there's been a few what if stories, if I remember correctly, where Sue does leave Reed for Namor. And I think they always eventually get back. I mean, again, at the end of the story, everybody figures out it's Doom. And yeah, but and again, there's also the very strange time that Reed got trapped in Doom's body, and then Sue and him, I think, were also like together, because she knew it was Reed.
Is it this image?
Yeah. Yep. But then the most recent one, and this was before the end of the Fantastic Four, as it were, during the latest Secret Wars event that Jonathan Hickman did a few years ago, is Doom basically, again, becomes God, you know, gets the power of these ancient elder gods, these kind of aliens that created the universe, and
makes his own suit.
Right. Well, he takes Sue and just assumes, you know, he doesn't just take Sue, he takes Franklin, he takes Valeria. You know, he has Johnny Storm as kind of like the keeper of the light. Like, Johnny Storm basically gets turned into the sun, and the Thing basically gets turned into the wall that's keeping out this massive, like, the Marvel zombies that are kind of trying to claw into you know, his world that he's created. But again, it's very telling that, again, Doom could literally do anything he wants. And so he's just like, what if I was Reed Richards? But I was also God, you know? And it's kind of like, huh, okay. That's
Reed, right? Like,
right.
He hates Reed, but he like looks up to him so much.
Right. You
know, he realizes Reed's smarter than him.
And, you know, Reed has somehow lucked into the life that he would want, all things considered. You know, Reed gets to be the genius. He gets to be the popular one that everybody, you know, in the world reveres for his knowledge. And yeah, he has a family. You know, he's got a wife. He gets to have all the things that Doom doesn't get to have, but Doom feels he also deserves.
He doesn't have to wear a helmet to cover his mangled face.
So yeah, I think it's very interesting. Again, when you look at, you know, that particular relationship, you know, it is in some ways it's Marvel telling us, like, this is for whatever reason, this is the relationship that everybody wants. Everybody wants to step into Reed's. Well, what's also telling, everybody wants to be Reed. Like, everybody wants to step into Reed's shoes. Nobody wants to be Sue. Like, nobody else. Nobody's trying to take Reed away from Sue. Like,
no. Reed's never stepped out on Sue.
Right.
So there's no, haven't found a situation where Reed's been tempted to be with somebody else, or has been with somebody else, or even, you know, nothing. It's his work, and then Sue, he gives Sue that half an hour every Friday night from 8:30 to 9.
But again, it's interesting that, like, you know, I don't know if it's just the way that Reed presents himself, or if Reed is just like, everybody just knows that Reed would not leave Sue, but, like, you know, no, I've never seen anybody make a play on Reed, like, from, you know, supervillains to you know, other, you know, superhero women to just regular ass women. Like, nobody has ever attempted from that vantage point to kind of break them up. And I think, again, it's kind of like, is that because people read Reed as somebody who is just going to stay, there's nothing you can do, you know? Or is it like, I see this relationship from the outside looking in, and I don't want that.
I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah,
like, if you see somebody, if you know a couple, be familiar with a couple. Well, I guess Reed just gives off that vibe, because even strangers aren't approaching Reed. It's not like,
yeah,
there's women who are like, oh, that, I love his salt and pepper brows. Or he's so, you know, flexible, like, imagine what he could do in bed. There's none of that. Well, maybe there has been a couple of situations where that's come up. I don't know. But I imagine if you were, like, especially if you knew them intimately as, like, a friendship, like somebody who knew them, and they split up, and then, like, say Reed was on the market, if you're a woman, you probably would be like, well, I've seen how that goes, because I saw how the dynamic between him and Sue, and I don't want anything to do with that. Like, especially when you're talking about superheroes, because most of them, they should be independent. They're able to, you know, make really strong decisions for themselves. So you're not going to have, like, She-Hulk. I really want to put up with Reed's bullshit. I'm like, nah. I'll just, you know, I can find anybody. You know.
Now, do you think Sue, like, independently, like, when Reed's out of the house or in the lab, and then the thing goes to play cards somewhere, and Johnny's doing whatever Johnny's doing, like, do you think she's on, like, Skype or Google Hangouts or whatever the equivalent is, like, just bitching about Reed to, like, Medusa or, like, any of the other, like, do you think there's, like, a weird, like, wives club of, you know, the Marvel Universe where, like, all the strong female counterparts, Medusa, you know, Mary Jane, and you know,
Jean Grey just does a psychic link, like, you know,
and it's just like, what did Reed do this time? And they all just kind of sit and listen. And they're like, yeah, motherfucker, like,
oh, that's too bad. But then deep down, they're like, all of them are like, well, I thought my relationship was bad, but they're like the friends who are like, they're like, oh. They want to hear the other person's bullshit, you know, problems, because it makes them feel better about their
kids. Right. I'm like, maybe Scott's not so bad.
He doesn't work all the time. With, like, every minutia of everything, and we don't have scheduled sex every Thursday. So at least Scott can let it loose a little bit.
So that's going to do it for this week's episode of Stark After Dark. Back next week with the second part of this episode. Me and Tony are going to discuss the other part of the Fantastic Four, which is Johnny Storm and the Thing. So be sure to tune in for that. If you want to get in touch with me, you can reach me at starkafterdarkpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at jrsosa18. That's at jrsosa18. But that's it for us. See you next week. Bye.